I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. 406 with Rob and Sue. We're out here at the Independent Sports Bar and Grill for Fan Madness. We're watching the tournament about to kick back up. I know Florida, Nevada is underway, which is, I think, one of the more interesting first-round matchups.
Yeah, Nevada is, I think, the 7 seed, right? I think it's 7-10, and Nevada's Nevada's one of those teams that, again, battle-tested.
They're good.
And senior-laden, junior-seniors, that a lot of people think that could be a sleeper Final Four team. I can't say that I've seen Nevada play, but the experts claim Nevada very good.
Well, when I saw them, I was impressed. They're big, and their coach for you NBA bros is old Eric Musselman.
Yeah.
The old Warriors coach.
Like he's bound. Well, he was at State.
Warriors,
he might have coached the Kings as well.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And was he at Cal and Stanford?
I don't remember him at Stanford.
He's bounced around a lot. He was in the Pac-12. Was he at Cal then?
Colorado?
I think he was at Cal or
Oregon.
Stanford.
Oregon State.
That's it. Let's look up Eric Musselman. Oh, by the way, and the text police are right. Ichiro did start.
He did, yes.
I thought, because I didn't see the beginning of the game.
I didn't either.
I just saw the highlights of it. I wasn't up
till... It was at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, 2:30 in the morning. I did see the beginning of the first one of those. I happened to be up at 2:30. But, yeah, I thought Service wasn't going to start him, but he did start. He got 4 at-bats and went 0 for 4.
Only one strikeout, though. So there's that.
We count that as a win?
Okay, so here's what's going on. We've got in the news at 4:30... We're going to talk about Oklahoma City, the Thunder. How much should people worry about them? They're down to the 8th spot, or at least a tie.
Yeah.
For the 8th spot in the West. And we'll get you caught up on all the NCAA tournament action. It's been a lot today. And, of course, that's what we'll do here with Fan Madness and such. By the way, if you come down here, you can enter to win a 65-inch television. But on the Ichiro note, the other thing that's not sort of insignificant about him is – he's a Japanese player who is headed to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
That is not insignificant. I feel like...
Is he the first one?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The only... If you go back, and there have been some good Japanese players that have come and played in the Major Leagues, probably the best being Hideo Nomo. But if you go back and look at Hideo Nomo's numbers...
No, they're not great.
Very average. Dude, he's Todd Stottlemyre. Ichiro is freaking Pete Rose. He has more hits than Pete Rose.
If you combined Japan and that, but he won the Rookie of the Year. He won an MVP. How many batting titles did he win? I'm sure he had a couple of those.
He
played a Gold Glove outfield.
Well, he won. Okay, so on those notes, he won MVP, batting title, and Rookie of the Year all
first year
at the same time in his first season.
Yeah.
And that no one has ever done that, ever. He's the only one.
So anyone
he also got 10 gold gloves. He's also, okay, so Johnny Bench is the only other player to win 10 gold gloves each of his first 10 seasons in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's rarefied air, dude.
Yeah.
The guy's amazing.
Yeah. And yet, I don't feel like, just in general, we, and I don't even talk about like Mariner fans, I just think in general, I think when you talk about the best players of his generation, I think very rarely does anyone bring up Ichiro, and I think it's wrong.
Well, it's the lack of pop. That's one thing.
But
let's be honest. I was thinking about this during the break. I think I sold it short when I said, here's why, you know, he's maybe not as popular. It's just because he's Japanese and, you know, language barrier and this and that. I'm going to take that up like 8 steps further and say that he is probably the most unrelatable star I've ever seen. I mean, how do you relate to Ichiro? He's not from here. He doesn't speak the language well. He's a freaking weirdo, right? I mean, the, Ken Griffey Jr. told a story that he went to Ichiro's house for dinner. And Ichiro, for those that dealt with him, a lot of people say he was very bristly. He could be very, obviously very standoffish. But he's also a very kind person. But if you don't...
He was single-minded in his focus that it was baseball, and if you interfered with his routine, he had no time for you.
If you don't know his background, he had a pretty rough... I don't know. He's got some issues, you know.
Well, he's got a dad that would basically beat him to make him a better baseball player.
No, basically, he did.
Yeah, it was Joe Jackson.
So Griffey went to his house for dinner, and he said that they were eating dinner, and once they finished dinner and before dessert, Ichiro left, and he left him at the table for like 35 minutes. Griffey didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
He later found out that Ichiro went out to the garage to work out.
He just
left his guest at the table.
Didn't say anything, just went in and gets the push-ups in.
That's how obsessed Ichiro was.
Yes.
And I don't know who can relate to that, right? Like, I mean, he's just
he's
the most unrelatable guy ever. But you can't deny what he did on the field. Very unique, one of a kind. And
I think the other thing that maybe...
This is his day. The thing about this is his day, right?
Yeah.
Bash him all you want, but can you wait till tomorrow? Dude, that was awesome today.
I think that the way he played, too, is not appealing to a lot of people. And you always heard that he could hit 30 home runs if he wanted to, but he chose to play the game that certain way, and I think that always bugged people. It was almost like a little bit of the Rasheed Wallace. And I know that's a weird comparison, but here in Portland, or maybe even LaMarcus is a better one, you always got this. Yeah, you're really good, but we feel like you could be so much better.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of people that think that if he would have sacrificed some individual, glory with the hits or opened his mind to what he was willing to do, that he could have been a guy that hit 275 or 280, but hit 25, 30 home runs and driven in 90 runs, and that would have been more... helpful to the team than him hitting 330 and slapping out singles on the ground.
That to me is insane. You're basically saying the guy who has more hits than Pete Rose, again, combined between Japan and the major leagues, you want fewer hits from him.
Yes. I think a lot of people say that.
I mean, his approach, yes, unique, but I think that's crazy. I think it's just finding ways to poke holes in a game in a guy's game who was just different. He was just different, and it wasn't always flashy, man.
Nope.
He would slap stuff to the right side and just beat it out.
Run it out.
But it's baseball. The baseball is about getting on base. It's about getting hits.
But
and
I guess
nobody did it better than that guy.
In modern baseball, and look, I agree with what you're saying. I guess I'm just playing devil's advocate because this is the argument here, and believe me, I hear it all the time from my brother. The argument is, yes, the idea of baseball is certainly to get on base, but the idea of baseball is also to help your team win. And the argument that people make is his refusal to change the way he plays cost the Mariners. And again, let's take the basketball analogy, right? What's the goal of basketball? You can say, well, if you've got a guy in the NBA and he says, I can score 25 a night, right? In my sleep, I can score 25 a night, but it's not going to help my team win, right? I'm going to be single-minded in my focus, but I'm only concerned about getting my 25. We kill guys in the NBA for that. And some people think that that was the approach that he took.
It's the other way.
The idea of getting on base to him was the end-all, the be-all.
Yes.
When the Mariners couldn't drive him in, he would get on base and not do anything with it.
Dude, it's the other way around. Those people are idiots because Ichiro sacrificed in the way that more guys should. More guys are swinging for the fences today than ever, and they're hitting 230. Ichiro said, no, I'm going to utilize my skills, my speed, my contact ability to get on base more than, I mean, I don't know what his on base percentage was career, more than any player ever. So
is there a happy medium between not swinging for the fences but also being a guy that can hit doubles and a guy, an Edgar Martinez type player as opposed to someone that is literally hitting the ball on the ground and trying to get to first at all costs?
I think maybe he could have muscled up more. I think that's probably I guess that's a fair criticism, but
that's the criticism he gets.
To me, it's like
I know.
Wow, it's just a real stretch.
But you know what? And honestly, towards the end of Pete Rose, that's what people said about Pete Rose, too.
People just don't like that. They like the long ball, man.
Well, they think it's a compiler sort of mentality. And by the way, Eric Musselman did not coach at Stanford or Cal. We're thinking of Mike Montgomery. Mike Montgomery.
Yeah, that's who I thought of.
Yeah, he coached at Stanford and Cal. Musselman never coached.
Talk to me about Eric Musselman's resume.
I'm curious now. Mostly NBA.
Yeah, Nuggets, I think, right?
Was he
in Denver? By the way, Ichiro was a leadoff hitter, thanks to the texter who texted. He was a freaking leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
And, I mean, nobody compares to Ricky Henderson's stats, really. I mean, Ricky Henderson was one of a kind as a leadoff hitter, too. And, of course, Ichiro didn't have the pop that Henderson did, but...
But people say he could have.
But you're kind of comparing him to Henderson, and it's like, but could have. Mind blowing. I got to stop because I'm starting to get fired up defending Ichiro.
This is the argument I have with my brother, and you're playing me.
He is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
100%.
And people are like, no, I needed more home runs from him. I mean, shut up.
Yep.
God, you can do that with any play. Like, you're basically saying he's not perfect. Okay, he's not perfect. Neither was George Brett. Neither was Barry Bonds. Neither was Babe Ruth.
Bonds was pretty perfect.
Jesus.
I mean, Bonds was – what do you want to criticize Bonds?
And he was an hell of an outfielder,
too. He was.
I mean, he was awesome.
He was.
With a hose. Okay, give me an Eric Musselman's career.
He started out as an assistant in Orlando in Atlanta, and then he was the head coach at Golden State. He was the head coach. We were right about Sacramento.
Yeah.
He was the head coach of Sacramento.
Okay.
And then he bounced around a little bit. He was an assistant at Arizona State.
Ooh.
And then he was assistant at LSU, and then he ended up being the head coach in Nevada.
No nugs?
No nugs. I don't know why, but I really got him confused with Mike Montgomery.
Mike Montgomery was better than Musselman.
So Mike Montgomery,
was good.
So Montgomery coached at Stanford and Cal, and then he also did some stints in the NBA as well.
All right. Anyone worried about Oklahoma City? We'll get to that next. 417 on the Fan.
This Fan Madness edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill on Southwest Broadway, is presented by Laurelwood Brewing and brought to you by Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Encore Audio Video, and the Nike Hoop Summit.
All right, in the news is coming up next. Turning our attention quickly to the NBA, we do have Jason Quick of The Athletic, our Trailblazers insider, coming up in about an hour, about 5:30. He'll join us. It is Thursday.
We start in the, is Damian Lillard better without C.J. McCollum after two game?
There is a lot to talk about, though.
Boy, he has looked. Now, granted, it was against, you know, not necessarily the best competition, but holy hell.
It's cranking up.
Did Dame look good the last, I believe, playoff mode has been activated?
So the Blazers won last night. Everybody else, all their enemies.
Yeah, it was the perfect night.
Lost. So quick pull of the standings here. Houston is the three. It's Golden State. So Golden State still leads Denver by a half game for the one seed. Houston is the three, and they're a half game up on the Blazers. And then there's a little bit of distance between the rest of the teams. Utah is currently the five. They're two back of Portland. And then San Antonio, the Clippers, and the Thunder are all tied at 42 and 30, so they're battling out for 6, 7, 8. The Thunder lost four in a row.
I think the Thunder with the tiebreaker, too, I think they're eighth, are they not?
Boy, man, I got to tell you, do you want to see Golden State OKC in the first round like I do?
Yes. Yes, yes,
let me tell you
yes.
something. I made a bet the other day with a buddy of mine who is certain that the Dubs are going to win it again. They're going to win their third in a row.
I think it was Draymond came out and said that. He got a little testy, and he goes, look, I don't know what's going to happen with Kevin and all this and that, but he goes, all I know is as long as he's here, we're winning another one.
Well, they are the favorite. And if you look at this, if you look at the odds, they're a big favorite again.
They're not playing well, though.
Well, they are playing well. They're just not playing the way we're used to, used to them playing.
Yes.
I mean, there's this year looks a little funky because of the Draymond Durant stuff, but they're still the one seed in the West. To me, their defense doesn't look as good as it has in years past. But, again, I think teams like that crank that up when they have to. So we'll see. But Oklahoma City's now lost four in a row. And, man, if there is ever an eight seed you don't want to play, It would be that. With Russell Westbrook and Paul George, oh, my God.
So Colin was talking about this today, and again, take it for what it's worth because, you know, Colin's got a bit of an axe to grind. He's not a Westbrook guy, and a lot of people point out that when he finds someone, whether it's John Wall or Johnny Manziel or whoever, if he finds a guy that he deems that he doesn't like, it's very hard for him to give credit. But I thought he made an interesting point that with Westbrook, he was talking about how Westbrook only knows one speed. Right? It's a million miles an hour. The triple-double throughout the entire year. You can't make an argument that anyone plays harder than Russell Westbrook, right? It's just that there's no let-up at all times. But he talked about how Westbrook is that way in every aspect of his life, right? And that eventually this NBA season, what was the analogy? He said that the NBA season is a marathon and Russell Westbrook is a sprinter. And he's a guy that goes out and he runs really hard the first three quarters of the race, and he's leading the race, and then he just doesn't have anything to finish. That his body wears out, that he wears out his teammates, that he wears out his coaches, that he wears out officials, that he wears out fans, that he just he can try to contain it all he wants, but the season is just too long, and eventually who he really is comes out, and he is a sprinter, and he needs to be a marathon runner. And I thought it was interesting that I think there is a real element to that, that a guy, you know, we talk about, you know, pacing in the NBA or whatever. He doesn't have it. He goes all the time, and it feels like his emotions are just boiling right at the surface, right? He just picked up his 16th technical foul.
He's pretty emo,
and that you can push that down as much as you want over the course of the season, but by the time you get to the postseason, he can't control it. He literally makes dumb decisions because he spent an entire year trying to keep it under check, but you can only shove down who you are for so long, and that he wears out himself and he wears out everyone else around him.
Yeah, I see why he says that. Maybe an element of truth to it. Maybe more than I'm even giving it credit for. But I was just looking at Westbrook's playoff stats. Mm-hmm. Dude, the guy in his last two playoff runs, 11 games, he's averaging 35 points a game.
And what does it get you?
Well, okay, but that's a different conversation. Oh, so he's saying, okay, so he's not saying he wears out. He's saying he just wears thin.
Wears thin.
Okay, so I took that as he kind of fizzles. Well, if you look at his playoff numbers, he doesn't. But okay, I get it now. He's saying he just kind of wears thin, and everybody just
it's you
has a hard time playing with
hard
him.
Hard time by, playing
by
around
this
him,
point
and he tends to go. You know, when he needs it the most, like the rational thought kind of goes away and he lets emotions take over.
Okay.
And he just becomes peak, out of control Russell Westbrook, as opposed to in control, able to defer, play alongside another superstar. Yeah, they made one with Durant, and, you know.
But they got there.
They did get there.
I don't know. I'll say just generally, he does seem the type that is going to have a hard time getting out of his own way when it comes to winning a title, right? Like, that guy's not wired for six rings.
Yeah.
But I do think he's good enough to win and win multiple. And they got really close already once. And I think with Paul George now, that team, before this losing streak, God, I think a lot of people thought they were the second-best team in the West.
Yeah, but
and then they get the eighth seed.
And this goes down to it, to that point. You need Paul George to be the best player on the team. And you needed Kevin Durant to be the best player on the team. And I'm not going to say that he necessarily deferred to Paul George for the entire year, but if you've watched Oklahoma City play, Paul George has been the focal point of that.
Yeah.
And this was kind of his point, is he can suppress it for only so long, and then eventually it turns into this is the Russell Westbrook show. He cannot keep it on the rails for an entire NBA season. Hmm. Again, marathon, or you know, someone saying that Whitlock called him the Mike Tyson of the NBA. Is great for five rounds. You get him into rounds, you know, 5 through 12, or what the championship rounds, right? 7 through 12, and that's where you kind of get exposed a little bit. And I just thought it was an interesting point.
That's because, definitely interesting,
you know, that you bring that up, because like on paper, he's as dynamic as anyone in the NBA. I mean, it's the second year in a row he's going to average a triple double for an entire season. He's amazingly consistent, and yet I don't know how many people necessarily believe that with him as your best player that you're going to do a whole lot.
Not as the best player. I think you're dead on when you say he's got to be the number two guy, and he has a hard time doing that. But Paul George has to be the guy. They're better. Thank you. They're better because of Paul George. I mean, that changed them.
Yes.
And he was really good putting up big numbers in between the Durant-Paul George teams. But that team wasn't going anywhere. It's like the Blazers with Lillard,
in
my opinion. So now that you have Paul George, as long as Russell Westbrook realizes how freaking good Paul George is and let Paul George be the guy, the team is that much more deadly.
But
can he realize that? Does he realize that?
In the big moments, can he?
Right. That's a huge question. It's a valid question. I think that it feels like, for at least when I've watched him this year, he's had that mentality. He's deferred a little bit more. But maybe Colin said on that, you know, this late in the season, or when push comes to shove and the lights are bright, that he won't be able to. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I tell you what, dude,
it's
I would not want to play them. If they're an 8 seed,
no.
I do not want to play them.
But it is amazing that a team that is that talented and has, you know, right now, I think this year that he, and Paul George has been the best two-way player in the NBA. And people are forgetting what Kawhi Leonard's doing up in Toronto, and they just got done taking out Oklahoma City.
What a move that was.
Oh, God.
Toronto.
If he ends up re-signing in Toronto.
Oh, my God.
I mean, what a ballsy move to go with that. But you've got arguably the best two-way player in the NBA in Paul George. You've got Russell Westbrook, maybe the most dynamic player in the NBA, and it's not like you have nothing around you. You have a good roster.
They're well built,
and you've got a real chance to be the 8 seed.
There's something. You're right. There's something
like you couldn't make it work with Durant.
That's right. It's like the Oppo of the Blazers. It's like put Lillard in place of Russell Westbrook,
and I believe
deadly.
I think Oklahoma City is better.
Yeah. Oh, way better. I think they're deadly.
And Russell Westbrook is an overall better player than Damian Lillard.
Yes.
But I think if you took Westbrook and Lillard and flipped them,
yes,
I believe Oklahoma City is not in the situation they're in right now.
I agree totally. I think the Oklahoma City's clearly number two in the West, if not pushing Golden State for number one, because Lillard gets the little things we're talking about. Lillard gets
yes.
And Westbrook doesn't. Now put Westbrook on the Blazers with this current team. Westbrook's averaging 40, 20, and 10.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, my God, you're amazing. And they're the 8 seed, and they're knocked out in the first round.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I don't know if it's ever happened where all the lower seeds won in the first round of the NBA in a conference. But if you look at these matchups, what if Oklahoma City, these aren't the matchups yet, but if it becomes – something like this.
If the era becomes.
Oklahoma City, tough eight. What if they knock off Golden State? And then you would have Utah beating Portland. That's not a stretch. 5-4. You would have to have the Spurs beat the
that would be the Rockets.
And then the Nuggets are beatable, right, as the two.
Nuggets, Clippers.
Clippers probably aren't going to do that, but you know what I mean.
Sure.
Like, has that ever happened that all the lower seeds won in the NBA playoffs?
No.
Because somebody was
That's
asking.
That's never happened.
There's no way.
And 8-1's only – has it happened twice?
It's happened a few times. Well, Mavs were the one seed. They got beat by Golden State. They got beat by Baron Davis in Golden State 1 year.
And then didn't the Nuggets do it?
Yep. Sonics.
Yeah, the Nuggets Sonics. That's the Dikembe Mutombo grabbing the ball.
So there may have been a few more, but somebody texted in earlier and they said, you know, why is it that I don't watch college basketball all year and yet I'm glued to it these 2 days these next 2 weeks? And it's because of the format, right? Formats in postseason of sports mean a lot.
Yes.
And that's why when you get into the NBA format, it's not as good because 7 games, even though it will produce a true champion, a much truer champion than any other sport.
The best team comes out.
That's right. The best team is going to win it because you play so many games.
If you had
fewer upsets.
If you had a one-and-done mentality in the NBA.
Can you imagine an NCAA tournament format in the NBA? That would be the best thing ever.
It'd be awesome.
Literally ever.
Yeah.
Seriously, that would be unbelievable.
Or even if you did like 2 or 3 game series, because you know I'm 64. You know.
I still think just one and,
one and
put
done.
These guys in a one and done. give me the top. Yeah. Let's just go top eight from each conference.
Yeah.
16 team one and done tournament in the NBA.
I want to throw everyone in there. Get them all.
Sign me up. Well, but that's I mean.
Well, how great would it be though on any given night? You know, you get any given night, you get a crappy New Orleans team or like Memphis is garbage, and all of a sudden Memphis has had a couple big wins at home.
I guess it could happen. All right, coming up next, we're already up against in the news for March 21st. We'll get to that. I think I have what is, at least to me, it makes me laugh. It makes me laugh hysterically. I believe it's the story of the year already, and we will get to that coming up next on The Fan. Here's Mike.
This Fan Madness edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill on Southwest Broadway, is presented by Laurelwood Brewing and brought to you by Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Encore Audio Video, and the Nike Hoop Summit.
All right, it's 4:40 on the Fan, Independent Sports Bar and Grill. We'll be down here tomorrow, too. You know, the Ducks game is tomorrow. So we'll get a little late start on the air because the Duck game starts at 1:30. We'll have that game here on the Fan, and then we'll come on after. But
probably around 4-ish. But we'll be here hanging out watching the game, so come on by and say hi.
If you're looking for a place to watch the Ducks tomorrow, it should be here. All right, it is March 21, 2019. It is time for In the News. I am your noted newsman. It is International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination.
Oh, well, that should be every day.
Which I'm all for.
No. Rob hates all races, which, does that make it okay if you hate everyone equally?
No.
Are you racist or are you just a hateful bastard?
Just hate people?
Yeah, if you just hate people. Like, what if you hate
then you're not racist.
What if you just hate all the races equally, but for racist reasons?
Oh. Well, you hate your own race?
Yeah. Like, what if you hated, white people because you thought that they were, like, elitist and superiority, you know, the whole thing? And then you hated, hated black people, then you hated Asian people, and you just hated everyone just kind of for all the racist reasons, but you hated everybody.
So you're like Rachel Dolezal or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? Wasn't she white?
Yeah, but she hated white people.
I don't know if she hated white people. I think
she wanted to be black.
Yeah.
But I'm saying,
I've never thought about it. Like, is there a person who is white who is racist against white people?
Well, there was that character in Django Unchained, Samuel L. Jackson. He hated black people in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
He was like the head of the Candyland plantation. But again, you have to hate all the races for racist reasons, but all of them. So can you be racist if you don't like any racial group? Have we found a racist loophole?
Interesting. Well, I find this to be the story of the year.
And real quick, on a side
note, at least so far,
as noted news contributor, today is also National Down Syndrome Day.
Oh.
And I have my brother-in-law, Jesse, who we've talked about with our Special Olympics Radiothon, is one of the most delightful human beings that you will ever come across. And I wanted to throw that in there as a news contributor because if you've ever met anyone that has Down Syndrome, you will not find a better and a finer group of human beings in your entire life. And I just wanted to give a brief shout out.
Jesse's the man.
On National Downs Day.
Now, is Jesse a listener?
I do not think so.
No.
We do not talk about Shimmer's Wrestling. And if we don't talk about Shimmer's Wrestling, he has no time for our shenanigans.
Understood.
Yes. And don't ask him to borrow one of his Shimmer's Wrestling DVDs. He will tell you no. Even though he's got like 80 of them, he cannot bear to part with one.
Well, I love this story. It makes me chuckle rather loudly. And this story will be topped throughout the course of the year, but
this one
hits me right where I just think it's great.
It's going to be on the medal stand, and if not,
maybe,
then it's going to be in contention.
And it's that, and it's not a local story, but it's that Mexicans are stealing all the materials from the border wall. And so what's happening is, Mexican officials, who are unnamed, have told stations down in San Diego that there have been 15 to 20 people that have been arrested, and they're supposedly like reinforcing the wall, kind of. Like they're not really building it, but
they're reinforcing the wall, and then in some sections they're building new walls. Like there is part of the wall that's under construction. Well, it's not a wall anymore.
Yeah, it's like a barrier.
It's a barrier, like steel slats or something.
So stupid. Okay, so then. But they're putting up the, what do they call the wire?
Razor wire.
Yeah, the razor wire up on the top of the wall. Well, the Mexican people are coming over and taking the wire down and taking it to their homes and putting it up as security. I'm sorry. That is so fantastic.
I just imagine, like, the construction site, right? Like, you're just laying out, like, the steel beams and whatnot, and then the crew shows up in the morning. They're like, what the hell?
It's like your retaining wall.
Yeah. I just walk out one morning. I still never forget my dad being like, my kid being dad. I think we're missing something. What? Our wall.
So what they're doing is, so through Mexican authorities, they told the San Diego Union-Tribune that those arrested were mostly Mexican citizens. One Tijuana resident who had the wire installed said the man who sold it to her sure didn't seem Mexican. The woman, identified as Veronica, told the newspaper El Sol de Tijuana that the man had blue eyes, blonde hair, and didn't speak Spanish well. The residents paid 40 pesos to have the razor-sharp fencing material installed outside their homes.
First off, how great is it that you're having razor wire installed
by the way,
in your home?
What a deal. $2.10.
I know. That's a great, great deal. I'd like to believe that, again, someone down there that's in charge of the border fence is like, you know what? This is ridiculous. wants to buy some razor wire. I got, like, Senator Rand Paul down there just hawking some razor wire to the people across.
So the Secretary of Public Safety in Tijuana, his name is Marco Antonio Sotomayor Azamecua.
Sure.
I think. Something like Amezcua.
Yeah, let's go with it. You're in the ballpark.
That guy. He said, we have detected that the barbed wire that was installed in the border area is no longer there. We know about the stealing of the wire from the United States authorities who have asked us for help through the liaison staff.
Can we send someone across the border and steal it back?
That is too good.
Can we hire some children to go in and re-steal the razor wire? And as someone that has
so now,
had...
So now, by the way, just to clarify, yes, we are paying for Mexicans' walls.
What we need to do, though... So here's the thing. We need to round up all of our meth heads now. Let's get some, like, our crack guys, and we just take them to the border and we send them across to steal the fencing back from them. And then we'll just, you know, we'll pay them in drugs.
Get some copper while they're at it.
Yeah. And while you're at it, you know, if you could rip some of that copper wiring out of the walls, that would be really great. As someone that has had a wall stolen, I will tell you it's quite frustrating. So while this story is quite entertaining, it's been frustrating to wake up one morning and find out that your wall has been taken. I know, because it's happened twice.
That's a great story.
What if my wall's in Tijuana now?
Yeah, it might be.
Maybe someone's,
let's go looking
maybe
for
Maybe someone
it.
Stole my retaining wall and took it
but
across
you,
the border.
You won't get to it. You got to clear the wire first.
Well, I don't have to clear the wire. The wire's down.
Fort.
Now I can just hop right over.
Next story is your esophagus is a weenie. It's 447 on the Fan.
This Fan Madness edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill on Southwest Broadway, is presented by Laurelwood Brewing and brought to you by Warren Allen Attorneys at Law, Encore Audio Video, and the Nike Hoop Summit.
All right, it is in the news for March 21. I've got another story. It's not of local variety, but I saw it today. And I'm worried about it because I drink a lot of hot coffee and hot tea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did see this one.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now they're saying that if you're a hot drinker, the dangers are, well, basically your esophagus is a big weenie. And if you drink 3 or more drinks a day that are over 140 degrees, you have an increased... chance of esophageal cancer by 90%.
I know, it kind of blew me away when I saw that. Now,
so basically what they're saying is if it's too hot to drink, it's too hot for your esophagus.
Now, I don't know if you had
a lot
this,
of people just chuck it down anyway.
When I saw that, the 140 degree, my instant thought was, well, what the hell is 140 degrees?
That's where you need the news to come in because they tested for you.
Aha!
And basically the report that I saw on it, the woman said 140 degrees, and she was doing the thermometer thing. She goes, it's not that bad. Like, a lot of us drink drinks that are that hot.
See, that was my question. Is that like, because we've all taken like the sip and you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Or you burn your tongue.
Yeah, you burn your tongue.
That's like, way north of 140.
Okay. So
yeah, you can drink. You and I can drink.
Drink it.
And that, albeit 140 is hot.
Yeah.
But we can have a cup of coffee that's 140 degrees.
So what you're saying
what they're saying now is.
Iced coffee?
There appears to me to be like a business idea of some sort of thermometer that people now need to buy and have in their homes
this
every
is,
morning.
This is our fear now. We're going to have to monitor the temperature. I got
an app or something. I don't know.
I got a kettle recently. You know, we drink tea at my house.
Yes.
I'm not a big coffee guy. But
does it whistle?
No, it's an electric kettle. You plug it in, and you can set the temperature on it.
So set it to 139?
Yeah, I set it to 139, and then it's a happy fizzy party at my house.
Yeah, but she put the thermometer in there, and she said basically what you do now is you have to put the thermometer in there and then wait for it to drop below 140 if you really want to avoid esophageal cancer.
Yeah, but, like, what if it drops to – are you telling me, like, that's the magic number? What if it's 138, 130? When am I safe?
Well, here's your this is your magic machine. You need to make a magic coffee maker or contraption that spits out coffee.
Like 132?
Yeah, 132 to 138.
Now, here's the question.
There's, like, your sweet spot.
When does it become, like, lame coffee or tea? Because we've all had, like, you know, if you're drinking tea, right, and you're like, oh, I need to let it cool down. We've all done it where you let it cool down too much, and then it tastes like crap.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think the hardest part is when you reheat something. Don't you ever do that? When you reheat something?
Yeah, it's never as...
Dude, it comes out so freaking hot.
Yes. You put it in the microwave for like 4 seconds, and it comes out at a gajillion degrees.
Yes.
I do this more with food. Like, I don't know how many times I've picked up a slice of pizza or a chicken wing or something, and you go to take a bite, and it's like, it's so hot, and you just...
And it's only one side of it?
Yeah.
And the other side's like lukewarm?
Yeah. You're just like, what is that?
Microwaves suck. By the way, we're getting cancer from that anyway.
That's true. Well, and cell phones and, you know, everything else. I saw that people want to, some scientists want to talk about earbuds.
And
as a cancer-causing.
Oh, really?
The wireless, you know, like AirPods or whatever.
Why?
That, I don't know, because apparently it's some sort of radio.
They're made with cancer?
I think that's what it is. Cancer cells make up the AirPods.
Wow.
There's nothing that won't kill us.
No.
We're all going to die.
Yeah, we are.
Just waiting for the giant boulder to fall on me.
I don't really want the coffee and tea to kill me. Just like the tater tots, you know?
Just a tot.
All right, that's Year in the News for March 21, 2019. Coming up next, we have the Hot 5 at 5, a big, giant NCAA tournament update. If you've been working today or busy and you haven't followed, we'll get you caught up on everything. And then Jason Quick on the Blazers next hour as well. We're live at the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, downtown Portland. Isaac and Souk on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.